The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 582. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, boys? How you doing, Mashed Potato Johnson?
Carlos Romero.
Yo.
Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
And Brian Manjoma.
Hello.
All right, we have returned, and let me do a double check. Yes, we are indeed 582. I was like, wait, is that right? Yes, we are right. You never know, man. You never know. We got a lot of shows. We're coming up on episode 600, people.
What the hell?
Yeah, that's going to be the first full week of September this year. Episode 600 of both Throwdown and Throwdown Your Questions. So we'll see if I can get someone fun on, you know. Maybe we should get Hip Hop Gamer on and talk about DLSS 5. You know?
Oh, no.
Oh, man. All right. We have returned.
We should just call that show the Hip Hop Gamer Show at that point.
Yeah, right? It's a Hip Hop Gamer Show. How it is. You know, yeah, bring back that old theme song if we could dig it up from somewhere.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. All right, man. Yeah, no Chris action tonight, and Brett may show up or he may not. That's always the fun game. Bread of the Wild. That's why we call him that for a reason. But yes, we have returned, and I wouldn't say it was a monumental weekend gaming, but some interesting stuff happened. But we're going to start the show off with some reviews, people. Not one review, but two. It'll be very interesting.
What y'all talking about?
We're talking about a game that was actually released today. Man, your favorite day, April 30th, by the way.
Yes. Jack, do you remember what happened today?
But yes, today was the launch day of Invincible Versus. Rich and I have been playing this game for a good week. Manny, I showed some of it to you while you were over the other day. And now we're going to do our review for you guys, as promised. So as always, I'll let Rich kick it off, and then I'll jump in with some thoughts. Rich, what do you think of Invincible Versus?
All right. Well, first and foremost, this was my most anticipated fighting game of the year. I'm very much aware that we still have Marvel Tokon coming, so got to check that out. But for the most part, I was very satisfied with Invincible Versus. Obviously, I did get a chance to check out the beta that happened earlier this month. So diving into the actual game, like I said before, it's the game. I really like the fighting controls. I feel like this is a game that anybody can play, even if they don't really like fighting games. It's just a very easy to pick up and play. Getting into, obviously, I had some questions about some of the things they had in the game. The online, very straightforward. I like the various teams, matchups that you can do. But I will say this, and this is where I do have some critiques.
Uh-oh.
They have a single-player story mode and an arcade mode. Now, the story mode, I very much like the presentation. There are certain parts of that mode that remind me of the Invincible TV show. They even actually have a scene where there's characters talking, and then they actually do the whole thing where they cut to the Invincible screen where they show him. So I thought that was cool. But my critique of the mode is that the way that it ends, clearly, that is not the conclusion of the story, and I don't really know if the developers are going to continue that story or add additional story content, or I don't know what they're going to do, but the way it ended, I was disappointed because it didn't really answer. Obviously, it answered the question of what the threat was that was in the story mode, but you didn't really get to have an actual fight with that threat, just various versions of the different characters. Which, you know, so the way they put that together, I thought was very good, very well done. But I just wanted them to conclude that. As for the arcade mode, that pretty much reminded me of the ladders in Mortal Kombat. That's all it is, like the towers, yeah. where you have all these those matchups. And I like that, obviously, you choose whoever is the captain of your team. When you beat that mode, you get like a little video that shows the ending of their particular story, but also teasing of what's next for the character. I did think that was pretty cool because of what, because again, it reminded me of the Mortal Kombat Towers. So yeah, I did like that. And again, it gave me some more story content, which again, I do like story stuff. So that was cool. But overall, I think that Quarter Up did a phenomenal job on the game. Like I said, the combat feels very great, very satisfying. I was beating the hell out of people online, and I also had a great time playing through the single player mode. So I look forward to seeing how they continue to support it. Obviously, they did announce two of the characters that are coming post DLC. I will say this, and I did say this in my review. Thrag, I'll be very surprised if he is not one of those other two unannounced characters. Yeah. But again, we have to wait and see. But overall, yes, it's a fantastic game. I am working on a video review right now, so definitely stay tuned for that on the Coalition and the Coalition Gaming. I just need a little bit more time to finish it. But yeah, I enjoyed the game for sure.
Yeah. To quote you, Rich, I agree with everything that has been said so far. yeah. One thing I'll say this, I'm surprised by how good this game is. I probably shouldn't be. Because, you know, it's the most of the guys from Killer Instinct. And this isn't some cheap cash grab license game, you know. It was made by, you know, obviously Skybound. And they want a good representation of their stuff. So I guess I shouldn't be surprised. But you kind of just, you assumed that. It's like, oh, it's after this property, it's going to be shit. But it isn't. It's very well done. Like the fights feel very visceral, very brutal. Combat. Very reminiscent, not even reminiscent, I'm going to say it's basically Marvel vs. Capcom 2, you know, 3v3 fighter. They're almost not even hiding that fact. Like, yeah, you know what this is, guys. Tagging is really good. But since this is the Killer Instinct team, you have combo breakers in this bitch. So if somebody's fucking you up online, just hit the combo breaker, you're out. But there's a cooldown period, so you can't just keep spamming it. I also like some of the other, like, attacks that you could punch somebody into another arena, which is pretty fun. Then you could kill them, you know, if you end the match with like a super move or even like a beat down, a certain type of beat down, you just fucking murder them, which is fantastic. So I enjoyed that. Really good. The mechanics are interesting because they're both like, you know, it's the adage, right? You know, simple to learn, difficult to master. You could pick it up fairly well. And I do agree that I think even casuals could have some fun. But like, if you go deep into this shit, which I still have not yet, you get a lot of satisfying stuff out of it. So as a fighting game, I think it's great. And I really hope, you know, it does well and keeps going because I think there's a lot of potential here. But to your point, yeah, that single player mode, I liked it until the end for the same reason you said, you know, I was like, oh, this is cool. It's like a lost episode of Invincible. Wait, that's it? I'm going to say it's a fucking cliffhanger. You know, here's my thing. I always said that I'm disappointed by how modern fighting games, whenever they have like a new season, they don't continue the story. It's just the same shit. Like Street Fighter VI, it's been locked with the same story. So I was like, I want you to expand on the story as the seasons progress. But I also want every story to be its own thing, right? Like if this thing would have ended on a satisfying like end, but also tease what's coming, that would have been good. They ain't no teasing. It's just, oh, shit. Like, you know, it's like, whoa, we can't just leave it like this. And if this game, you know, doesn't do well, if it bombs, we ain't getting no resolution, you know? So I'm worried about that. Also, what you said about the arcade endings, yeah, they're your typical video game, you know, fighting game arcade endings where it's like you get a couple of, like, kind of still shots, some voiceover, and then it's over. Like, it's fun in some cases, but you know, it's kind of cheap, too, you know? But still, overall, despite all that, you know, some of my grievances, I'm having a lot of fun with the game. I can't promise this, but I'm going to try to get the platinum. It doesn't seem like it's that difficult. The most difficult one seems to be to beat the Invincible arcade ladder, which is like 12 matches on hard mode. And this game can get... I'm not going to say it's very difficult, but it can get brutal sometimes. But I also feel that encourages you to use all the modes and stuff But overall, I think these guys did a good job, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it stacks up against Marvel Tokon, you know? So that'll be fun. Do we have any questions here about Invincible Versus for me and Rich?
Not really.
I mean, yeah.
Seems like it's, you know, a pretty interesting fighting game. What do you think of the new characters they had added to that, you know,
The one new character is all the characters are from the comics. The only new character they added was this girl called Ella Mental, you know, with the Invincible theming. She's cool. She kind of reminds me of Storm. Yeah, she kind of reminds me of Storm from Marvel vs. Capcom 2. You know, she has a lot of like range attacks and stuff. Obviously, a lot of element shit. She seems to fit the world pretty well. And even in the story, they couch her as she is a new character to this world and she's still learning stuff. You know, so it wasn't like, hey, everybody, look, and, you know, they didn't pull a Poochie, right? Hey, it's Elemental, you know? They didn't do that. She's like, yo, who the fuck is that? You know, they're still not getting used to her, so that was cool. Rich, what did you think of Elemental?
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed Elemental. It's just like you said, very, very, very reminiscent of Storm in those other games. Obviously, her role was important for the story because it feels as though...
Yeah.
She was utilized, and at the very end, she was a part of the resolution. Well, some of the resolution, because, again, the story is not complete. But I didn't have a problem with her. I thought that was a nice addition to the game. But, you know, I will say this, though. Conquest, man.
Ooh.
Conquest is the man. That's.
Do you prefer him over Battle Beast, though?
I can't go that far. I will say this though, when I played the Conquest arcade, Skybound is very, very smart because the end of that storyline with Conquest, he's fighting Battle Beasts.
Yeah.
And he defeats Battle Beasts. And we all know that they're actually working on a Battle Beast comic now where he has a fight with Conquest. So they're very smart with how they think about these, how they're marketing this, and that's advertisement for that fight, pretty much.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And I agree with you. They got to have Thrag in there, man. If he's not in this season, people are going to be very upset. So we'll see how that works. There's that review. And then the other review. And I apologize to anyone who's watching the video now live because on my screen it's backward. So this product I'm about to show is also going to be backward. But for you guys here in the chat, in the panel, you're going to see it just fine. I'm going to call this a quick review because I still need to spend more time with it. Of this, the Steam controller, people. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh.
You know? So the first thing I want to show you, because the people are like, oh, that controller is too fucking big. It's too fucking big. Look how it compares to an Xbox controller. Not that big now, is it? A little bit bigger, but it's not widely bigger, you know?
So it's a pretty close to a PS5 controller too, because the 5 is very close to that size as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay. There you go. This thing is all, like, if you have a Steam Deck, the feel of this, the I guess the casing of it has that kind of texture that the Steam Deck does, like the kind of matte finish. The buttons are very also reminiscent of the Steam Deck. I kind of feel similar. The touch pads are really cool. They're like haptics. They're not working out because obviously it's not even turned on. But, you know, I like how they're kind of bigger. And then you see here in the back, you got 4 back buttons. And what's cool about them is they kind of lay where your hand naturally, like where your ring and middle finger kind of rest. So they don't get in the way. But the weight distribution is like a pound and a half, little over a pound and a half. So pretty lightweight. Xbox controller is actually heavier, believe it or not. This has like nicer weight distribution. It's very seamless to connect to the Steam machine, to your PC or Steam Deck, or even the Legion Go S with Steam OS. There's a reason I'm saying that. And you connect it with this puck that like magnetically snaps to the back, which is pretty cool.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and this is like, it's both how you pair it and also how it transmits. So you connect this end to the PC with US, you know, has a USB-A, but you can also use whatever USB-C cable you have. And this is the actual transmitter of the controller. And I think it's pretty clever. And if you want, you know, again, you can take it off, use it how you want. Good stuff there. Performance, I didn't have any problems with it. The sticks are really nice. The sticks are actually, they're using this new technology called TMR technology. I'm not going to tell you what TMR means. It's like tunnel magnetic bullshit or whatever. But basically, it's supposed to be even more responsive and less prone to stick drift than even Hall Effect. Because Hall Effect, for like the last 2 years, was like the gold standard of arcade sticks or use of analog sticks, analog, of thumbsticks. These are not analog, obviously. But now we got TMRs, and they feel great, very responsive. I would even say even smoother than the Steam Deck, which is nice, but obviously they're a lot bigger. What else? Highly customizable. If you go through the Steam app, you know, like you go to the settings, you select controller, you could remap all of this shit how as much as you want. You know, make the thumbsticks like more sensitive, whatever, dead zones, all that shit. Really good stuff. Again, one caveat is this only works with SteamOS. So if you want to play your Epic games, your whatever games, it ain't going to work with that. This doesn't work on PlayStation either, naturally. So that's the only caveat. But again, like I said, if you have Legion Go S, works fine. Steam Deck works fine. Anything, you know, Windows running Steam works great. But yeah, overall, this thing's awesome. Also, I did want to bring up the pricing thing because people are complaining about the price because this costs $99. While that is like generally $20 more than a normal controller, it's still about $100 less than a pro controller. And this has pro controller features, you know, like the TMR sticks and the back buttons and stuff. It's missing a couple of things. Like it doesn't have trigger locks for the back buttons. But that's like the only concession I kind of see. So it, to me, for what you get, and especially if you're a Steam guy exclusively, like $99 is like no brainer for this shit. This thing's fucking awesome. I saw a lot of reviews saying it's now their favorite Steam, their favorite PC controller. This may be my favorite as well. This thing is fantastic. So I believe it drops May 4th or 5th, sometime next week. So be on the lookout for it. It comes with my Tony Steele of approval. You know, do you guys have any questions about this thing?
Was that Brett that just came in here?
Yes. Hello, Brett.
Brett, it was indeed. Hello.
Yeah.
You are the Steam Master. You have questions, yeah. Don't you?
Yeah, Brett. I got the Steam controller. Dun, dun,
dun. Oh, that's what this is. Okay, I was wondering about that. I was like, I didn't know if this was I didn't realize the Steam running controller. Fuck yeah, man. I'm really excited. The disconnecting USB T. I have actually several adapters like that for some of my key electronics, like the screen glasses that I have that kind of make a virtual 90-inch screen. Yeah. I have those set up on the same thing because they're a great breakaway defense. Like, I had missed the days of the Xbox breakaway cords, and so I had gone searching for a solution and found something similar myself. So I'm really super ecstatic and somewhat validated to hear that Steam kind of came to the same place because I was like, oh, shit, well, fuck, they're right there with me. Awesome, great minds and all that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for reminding me about that. This does have Bluetooth as well. You know, if you don't want to use the puck for whatever reason, you could use Bluetooth. So you're good to go.
But this, I gotta say that wireless that quick connect, like I had that shit on my Chromebook and one of my controllers. Like it makes it just makes charging like so easy. Like it makes it almost as easy as just setting it down and then you kind of like hold the control or you pick up the cord and hold it somewhere near. Like within 4 to 5 inches, and it'll kind of automatically grab and snap to it, and like that's it is honestly easier than putting something on a magnetic charging pad because even then you have to like, oh, am I setting it on right? Has it connected? This thing just like it just snaps and grits like a snake biting something. It's just fucking amazing, and it's honestly it's a great interface to run through USB-C 3, and honestly it does a lot of really good like lightning. Port level support, so it's super responsive on top of all that. So I love the fact that Steam is still out here innovating. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, so definitely all the hype you heard about this controller is true. I'm trying to pair right now because I pressed the button. Again, pairing is super easy, not a problem at all. It even makes sounds, and I'm still trying to figure out where the speakers are on this thing. I'll figure it out. You know, and the officer's like, yo, where are the speakers on this fucking thing? They're probably hidden under the buttons or something. But yeah, dope stuff. All right, now that we got those reviews out of the way, let's get into some of the news. And we're going to talk about the biggest one that pretty much has dominated gaming since last Friday, I believe. Like, this shit's been going on for like a week now. It kind of ended up in a nothing burger, but, you know, we'll get to it. Oh, hold on a second. Okay, so I'm reading this article from IGN, but I see the byline here by Cade Onder. Shout out to this brother. He used to be an independent journalist. You're writing for IGN now, brother? Good for you. And this dude's like 23 years old.
Good stuff.
He's a good guy, too. You know, he doesn't poke the bear or nothing on Twitter, you know? Although he gets a lot of shit, which is like, why? He's like, this guy's not anything, you know? Anyway, so I'm not going to go into all the details. It's just too much. But basically, for those who may not know, over the weekend, it was discovered that PlayStation, PS5, was implementing, a form of DRM, where if you bought a game and you didn't check in 30 days later, you couldn't play that game unless you checked in, right? All kinds of drama happened. People alluding, you know, the Don Matrickisms, all that shit was coming back. And Sony didn't say shit for days, you know, and people even did their own tests. Like, I believe it was Spawn Wave Media. He did a video where he bought like three or four new games digitally, took out the CMOS battery, which I didn't even know that was a thing, but it's like apparently it keeps track of what games you buy, and the games just fucking stopped working, you know? Go ahead.
That thing is kind of like the battery clock inside of your computer.
So gotcha.
As soon as you pull that out, it just forgets everything.
Yeah. So that happened, and then there was other things because people are reaching out to PlayStation support to find out what the fuck is going on. One of them, you know, I believe it was probably an AI chatbot, said, "Yes, this is our new policy. You know, every 30 days you got to check in. You know, whatever." And then other people got in touch with Sony, like actual customer support. And they were like, that's not an official policy. So it's like contradictions and shit, people going crazy. And now finally, Sony made an official statement. And the real reason why they're doing this, which is wild in and of itself. So apparently, this is what Sony said, at least, because I got a little something to say about this one. But this is what they say. Apparently, some people have been buying games, getting a refund, than going offline and keep playing the games. So Sony said to stop that, we need to implement this thing. And it said it's only a one-time check. You check in one time and you're good, right? This is the problem I have with this, with what Sony says. I have two problems with it, actually. First of all, I consider myself pretty tuned in with the PlayStation community, right? I know certain ways people do things to play games, right? Like sharing and all this stuff. Some things that may exactly not be quote unquote legal or permitted. I've never heard of anybody doing this on PlayStation. So I'm like, this is a widespread problem and it's something I've never heard of. And then two, the most significant one, this is when Manny and I were talking about, since when the fuck does PlayStation give out refunds? Unless it's an extenuating circumstance like Cyberpunk or fucking Concord, PlayStation does not give refunds very easily. So you're telling me that this is a mass problem? Hold on, Brett, let me finish. You're telling me this is a mass problem, everybody's refunding, when you're notoriously known to not... Hey, Brett, you're going to get to you in a second. When you have a history of not refunding people, or if you are giving refunds, make them go through the fucking loops like Brett did. You know? Go ahead, Brett.
Oh, no, it's not a loop. It's an intentional wall. See, here's the way they classify it. So they will only give out refunds on games that have known issues. A known issue, by their definition, is an issue that is not being able to be resolved by the developer, which is usually them in that case, and has been acknowledged by the developer as a known issue. So if they don't make a public statement saying that it's an issue, they're not legally obligated to give you a refund. So if they just don't talk about it, they don't have to do anything. That's literally what they told me.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it's because of shit like that that I'm kind of not so inclined to believe, to quote unquote, the official narrative. And then the other thing that no one talks about is that this whole DRM thing was actually, Sony actually told you about it. You just didn't pay attention because you don't read and license agreements like I don't. Manny, fill us in, man.
Yeah. So this thing that came as a surprise to everyone, so was literally inside of the user agreement. In fact, the PlayStation literally goes out of its way, which I've never seen this shit before, but they legitimately throw a pop-up on your screen to look over the user agreement, and inside the user agreement is this information.
Yeah. And that's, so this has been out for, Manny, when did you see that? Like last month, right?
So, okay. So, you know me, I don't like update my, the only significant, I don't like play my PlayStation like constantly. So when I saw this was around the time Pragmata came out. So when I, so it's probably like an old update, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, got pushed over into my console. And then I, as soon as I turned the thing on, I noticed, I'm like, hey, wait a minute. What is this crazy thing that's telling me that, you know, about the new user agreement and all kinds of other stuff? So yeah, it's in there. So, you know, it's not like they pop this thing on you, everybody unnoticed. You just, nobody bothered to read the user agreement.
Yeah. And to Manny's point, that was me, because I did notice that about a month ago. Because you're right, PlayStation never pops up user agreement when you're doing a system update. I saw it. I'm like, whatever. Well, fuck this bullshit. Let me get to my fucking game. Yeah. So it, so that was there. It was, but I did what millions of people did. They're like, fuck it, I don't care. Play my game now. You know?
Yeah, I literally said, like, okay, this thing is going out of its way to show the user agreement. So I better look through this and see what they did. And yeah, it's in there. So it's not new.
Yeah, so that's the, that again, that's Sony's official stance, is to prevent these people doing this refund trick. But I don't know, man. I kind of smell a lot, smells fishy to me. You know,
yeah, I mean, it's probably to curb some other behaviors that they don't, you know, really care for, which we haven't fully figured out what they are. I mean, Brett, you were about to say something.
Go ahead, bro.
Bro, I was asking, did they abandon the whole you lose your digital library if you don't log in for 30 days?
No,
that was never a thing.
It's never a thing. I mean, to be honest, it sounds fairly close to what Steam does, but even Steam doesn't give you like a 30 day like thing. Like, it's just like, if you're off Steam for a while, you have to log in to get your Steam games to run again. Like, I've had that, and you know, because I don't log into Steam all the damn time, but every single anytime I do, it's usually months off, and it tells me, hey, you can't run this yet, so start up stupid Steam. So it logs, so it does have that sort of a DRM. The 30 day thing is an interesting sort of weird, like, okay, yeah, it just won't work until you log in again.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like a lot of people, like, you know, a lot of people online have been sort of conflating this with the Microsoft DRM situation.
Yeah.
You know, back in the you know, was it the one era, right?
Yeah, 2013.
Yeah, in 2013. But the big difference between this and what Don Matrick was talking about, they were talking about locking physical games to your consoles.
Mm.
So when you stick your game into the console, it is locked to your console specifically. And if you were to give it to your friend, or you were to let somebody borrow that same disc, you would have to pay again. That's what they were looking for, because they wanted to curb resale, like at places like GameStop or rentals. But yeah. Obviously, the whole, you know, want to trade with your friends thing kind of put a nix on it. And a lot of people had a lot of issues with it. But the thing is, that doesn't mean that there isn't a form of DRM. It's just not draconian like that, where it's like, oh, you know, where it locks down a physical title. So theoretically, for the sake of conversation, theoretically, if you buy a physical game, you won't actually receive this 30-day like login. But that said, most games need to connect online anyway. How many games do you know that are single player that still need to call home? Have you ever had your PlayStation network, be down, you know, the PlayStation network down and attempted to play like a single player game? Or let's say for, what was it? What was the other thing that happens? Oh, you know, your electricity, you know, not the electricity, but your internet's down and some of your games don't work. That's still a form of DRM.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. So yeah, that's what it ended up being, but it did take him a while to get to back to people, you know, and it was going out of hand.
To be honest, I didn't think they were going to respond because it's inside of the user agreement, but they're like, okay, you know, I guess they're like, I guess somebody was saying, hey, what are these people going on about? All right, say something, you know?
Oh man. So yeah, there's the great DRM drama of PlayStation, that happened this week. All right, next story here. And I'm noticing a pattern with these stories. There's a good pattern. Because remember, okay, I said, okay. Yeah, it's a good pattern. Because I noticed, you know, I actually look at the bylines. This story is written by Thomas Frances, another guy that I used to know from back in the day. He was on Dual Shockers after I had left, but I met him. Actually, Manny, you'll find this interesting. I met him for the first time in real life at that Contra event in Seattle. Because we already know each other on Twitter, but I met him there. He's writing for GameStop now. Good for him. I love seeing the come up, you know? Another good dude. GameStop. I always get those shits confused. The next story, I wonder if the next story is going to have byline by somebody I know. So anyway, this next story, no surprise here. The next gen Xbox will be impacted by the RAM crisis. And who told us this? None other than Miss Asha Sharma herself, people. You know?
Okay, from the horse's mouth. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to read a little bit of the story because I want to give, you know, I want to, not only do I want to give you guys some insight, but it gives Thomas here some love. Like all of your favorite piece of technology, the next generation Xbox console is feeling the impact of memory shortages, according to newly appointed Xbox CEO Asha Sharma. Sharma's statement on the impact of the memory crisis comes from an interview with GameFile in which she was asked about the release timeline for the next generation Xbox and how the RAM shortage is impacting the transition. So this is what she had to say. It was a quote. All these things are an equation. Memory costs will impact pricing, will impact availability. As we think about being where the world plays, we will take that into consideration. So we're not ready to share a launch timeline right now. The world's pretty dynamic. My number one focus, though, is to focus on what's in our control. Build a great console to play games, including your PC games. So, yeah, not surprised. You know, this is also why. Go ahead, bro.
Did she just say including your PC games?
Yes. Yes.
That
you did.
That seems like a even bigger one than the RAM shortage.
Yeah.
She's talking about PC games running on an Xbox.
No, she didn't say that. She says to focus on playing great games, including your PC.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, including your PC. I forgot what I was going to say. But yeah. Oh, yeah, no surprise here. You know, this is what, that's what I want to say. Related to this guy, people were asking, why is the Steam controller out now? Where's the Steam machine? You know what Valve said? They were very blunt about it. They said, because there's no RAM in that controller. That's why we're able to get it out now.
Yes.
You know?
It doesn't need any memory.
I could tell you guys some behind the scenes shit, man, of companies that they're like, yo, we want to get this product out, but we don't know how much this shit is going to cost. They don't even know, you know, because the one week could be different from the other, as we've seen. So not surprised by this. And remember, the Xbox is not going to be out until potentially next year, but they have to worry about this now because, you know, from all the reports are saying, this RAM shit is not going to go away even by the end of this year. You know, it might even get worse. You know, thanks to idiots like Sam Altman and stuff hogging up all the fucking world memory. I'm not making that up. 40% of the world's memory supplies in this fucking idiot's control now. You know, or he promises to pay for it. You know, even though his fucking company's unprofitable. You know,
honestly, that shit may fall through, but there's bigger issues. As somebody who just bought a PC a couple of days ago, we're in an interesting place. Actually, RAM is going down. It's gone down from like
a little
500
bit, yes.
to 500 to 350. That's a lot of it. That's for DDR5, yeah. Like a 32 gig. Yeah,
but
stick,
what was
like,
it beforehand, though? You know?
At one point, it was about 125, and then it went up to about 500. Now it's down to about 350.
Christ.
And analysts are suggesting that it'll probably plateau close to around the $200 mark by around winter time / early next year. But that's where it's going to stay. We're never going to get back to the $150 dirt cheap RAM. The problem is, as RAM is coming down, we're running into a CPU shortage, especially as Microsoft has invalidated millions of PCs. There's a rush. And so, like, I got a mini PC. And honestly, these things are they've become fucking beastly. This thing is like a 32 gigs of integrated RAM. It's got it can actually play fucking games. I'm shocked. They're at this weird point where you can get a lot of power out of them, but they're also going to be utilized and leveraged a lot for AI stuff. So the model that I got probably going to be sold out by winter time. So we're in this weird place where CPUs or RAM is coming down, but CPUs are going up. So if you're in a place to, I highly recommend getting yourself a bare bones CPU, GPU, or CPU motherboard setup. And if there's RAM or a GPU that you want to go off of, you can kind of wait. This micro PC set I built, it actually has like a, when I say it has integrated graphics, that usually means garbage. This is the first integrated graphics card. It's the Radeon 7800 series. It's actually not garbage, and I'm fucking shocked. This whole thing, I don't understand. It's got the VRAM of an Air Mac, plus the ability to kind of, you know, run games as well as a $1,000 gaming laptop, but it's like $700.
Are you talking about a MacBook Air? Is that what an Air Mac is?
Or the whatever the new mini PC thing that they have?
Oh, Apple I'm forgetting the fucking name. The mini. You know, the Mac Mini.
Yeah, the Mac Mini. Okay, so to get the specs that I would get in this thing in a Mac Mini, it would have cost me $600. If I were to get these specs in an Air Mac, it would have cost me $2,100. If I were to get these
Air Macs, let's get the names MacBook. Right here. Yeah, MacBook. There you go.
Sorry. But if I would have tried to get this in like a budget-friendly gaming laptop, because this runs, it games 1080p. It's not going to be 4K, but it games 1080p between like 60 and 120 frames per second, which is ridiculous. It's not quite as powerful as the PS5. It's more powerful than the PS4 Pro, and about two and a half times as powerful as the Steam Deck, but it runs off 65 watts max. It's just a weird, weird fucking middle ground. And for the price, it's kind of honestly insane. So we're at a place now where if you've been holding out buying hardware, or if you're thinking about trying to do anything with unified memory, creative software, or any kind of AI stuff, dear God, do it now. Don't buy your RAM now, but do your CPU shit now, because a reckoning's coming. And we're going to be 3 years into a CPU shortage the same way we're into a GPU shortage and RAM shortage right now. The problem is, this is like, okay, so you remember when computers were an entire room full of transistors?
Yeah.
Imagine if we tried to ship and product computers when they were in that stage, instead of waiting for the home PC to be built by Apple years later. It, like, if they're like, oh yeah, no, you could just call on your phone and put your phone on this cradle and we can use this big room full of transistors, it would have been a fucking nightmare for the environment and everything. So that's the problem. The interesting thing, as I'm sure Chris will attest to and I've been experimenting and playing with, is when you do that shit like local on your own, it actually
Brett, by takes, the way, let's not get too off track, by the way, because I see where
I'm
you're
not,
going.
I'm not. I'm yeah. talking. I'm talking about what is essentially for $50 more than a PlayStation, getting something that runs about 15 to 20% less than a PlayStation, but is capable of frame generation, so it can match or beat PS5's actual in-use scenario. I'm talking about a competitor, a quarter of the size, a quarter of the wattage, and about the same price that's running up on the heels that also just happens to be a PC. So I'm giving specs on it as a thing that I bought that wasn't intended to be a gaming machine. Because honestly, I got a 470 laptop downstairs, but that thing sounds like a jet engine and it burns like hot fire. I'm just shocked by the quality of the gaming on this. So I'm kind of saying, like, hey, for gaming out there, if you're looking for a budget thing, get these things while they're still budget. Because AI bros are going to make this shit ridiculously expensive. Do it before Christmas. You're welcome.
All right. Carlos, what are your thoughts on what Asha Sharma said?
Sorry, I was away for a bit. What did she say exactly? If it's too long, I can.
Project Helix is going to be expensive because of the RAM shit. She just flat out said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, no duh. I mean, everyone's seen episodes of Throwdown. We've said this for years.
You know?
You know? So this was inevitable. I mean, especially when they're targeting to make a PC, more than anything, mm-hmm. that's going to be even more expensive because, you know, PC takes up a lot more construction. Maybe it's got more RGBs, and RGBs might go up soon too. You never know. But yeah, I'm not surprised. And honestly, it's not just Project Helix. It's going to be the next. I mean, we talked about what the potential prices is. The PS5 Pro is $899. It's going to be around that price, or maybe even more. So we'll see about that, and we'll see about Helix, which, you know, we kind of predicted, depending on how many SKUs they have, but definitely somewhere around, I predict somewhere around $1,200 or something for one of the cheaper ones. But we'll see.
Yeah. What about the rest of you guys? What do you think about Asha Sharma's statement? Again, my thing is like, yes, it's pretty obvious, but, you know, it's also kind of weird hearing an executive just saying it so bluntly.
Sometimes it just needs to be said, to be honest. It's like, it's literally just confirming what is going on in the industry. It's not like she's going to lie and say, oh, no, we're totally going to figure it out. No, it's like, yeah, that's it.
I half agree with Manny. Here's the part where I call bullshit. When they do sort the RAM out, you think they're going to lower prices?
They're not.
No.
Absolutely not.
No, it's still going to, if somehow for some mysterious reason that everything gets all, you know, squared away, they are not going to give us back all that money that they wanted for those consoles. Everything's just going to stay the same amount.
Yeah, that's how they get you. You know, they're loving this shit, you know?
Rare when a company ever gives back and says, hey, we're gonna drop them.
Yeah. All right, so there you go, Miss Asha Sharma. And while sticking on Xbox, the latest financial report from Xbox came out, and as you expect, things are not looking good, especially for hardware. Although it seems the actual company brought it, you know, the actual division did bring in a good amount of money. They're up 18%. Again, they own Activision. Activision still makes a lot of money. Xbox in general. That's Microsoft. Because again, they blend all this shit together, so it's hard to tell. That's why Chris never does financials for Microsoft, because they just bury the Xbox shit, the shit we care about. But yeah, in general, the console business is down 33%. And again, Asha Sharma came out flat out, said, yep, we didn't hit our target, we got to do better, you know? Which is interesting, because every time these reports came out with Phil Spencer, he never said shit. He's never said anything publicly. It's just keep it going. This bitch came out and said, yeah, this isn't good. We're going to do better by you guys. She's fine. Said, we lost our focus. We got to get that shit back. Oh, and also related, very interesting. This is more, if you ever dealt with Microsoft PR folks, right? Or Xbox folks, whoever you deal with, their email is always at Microsoft, right? Now they changed it to, if you're working specifically on Xbox, you're going to see at Xbox.com. Which is very interesting, you know, so I'll be prepared to look at those emails, but it does go to show you that they're like, okay, guys, we're Xbox, let's go back to that. You know, it's not every Xbox is a everything machine, you know, so maybe things could get turned around, but right now they're still in that, you know, free fall. But obviously it would be unfair to expect this to just rebound, you know, after her being there for 2 months, you know. But yeah, Xbox hardware revenue dropped 33%. Not surprised at all. Because not only that, not only do you have no games to play, but fucking things are more expensive. When we see those Sony finances, it's going to be very, very interesting too, since their consoles cost a lot, you know. But there's that. What else? Any other numbers here? Yeah, we talked about the price decrease of Xbox Game Pass, which is a good thing, you know. But overall, Microsoft is still doing well overall as a company, without Xbox, because Microsoft, you know. But we'll see. Next up here, what are we talking about? Oh, it's good news. It's some actual good news. Crimson
good
Desert.
Good news, everyone.
Crimson Desert, people, because we talked about this. The game has sold over 5 million copies, and because of that, the developers have given everybody on the team a bonus, $3,400 across the board. You would never see a Western company do that shit. You know, they would give all that money to the CEO, you know? So pretty wild stuff. Manny, what'd you have to say about that?
What was that again? Sorry.
Yo, man, pay attention. Crimson Desert, they gave everybody a bonus. We talked about this.
So
while you were here. Yeah,
we talked about it before. So yeah, you know, that's a cool thing. I mean, it's nice to hear that. You know, when something does well, they, you know, people are getting bonuses. I remember, you know, Shift Up said that they were going to add, you know, they bought their guys, their team, a bunch of PS5s and PS5 Pros. So it's nice to see that stuff. I mean, you know, especially with all the news that was coming from that studio, you know, where they were saying they were working their people to the bone and all this other stuff. So at least they're getting something. Hopefully it's a significant bone.
It's $3,400. And it said that's not that they're not stopping there. They're going to give them another one later. So basically, I'll read this part. This is pretty interesting. The official figures put Pearl Abyss at 733 employees, which means the total payout of the bonuses is $2.5 million. Apparently, it doesn't stop there either, with another bonus due at the beginning of 2027 based on 2026 financial performance. That's what IGN, you know, learned from them. So they're going to be getting even more money because their game did well. Again, you would never see a Western company do something like this. You know, if you could tell me, if you give me an example, I'd like to hear it. You know, because it seems like I'm only hearing about Korean companies doing this shit. You know, I mean, I don't even think Japanese game companies have done this in my experience.
Well, to be honest, like their thing, you don't hear about it, but the thing is that the way their salaries work is based off of bonus.
Oh, okay.
So bonuses it's different are then, yeah. What get the, yeah, bonuses are what get their salary up to be more, you know, like do you know to a living wage or even above that. That's what their bonuses do. But that's also a part of their you know, pressuring system when certain things happen and they want to get rid of people.
Yeah, so that's right.
They remove the bonuses going back to their original salary. And there's, yeah. So then it becomes an unbearable situation as resign.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise get less money and get the window seat.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. But yeah, shout out to that studio, man. I also saw another report about how most, you know, this expected that most of the people who bought Crimson Desert haven't even gotten halfway through it. It's just so much, you know, which is interesting. But yeah, shout out to Crimson Desert, man. Another one we have to talk about this. I haven't seen this myself, but it was making the rounds today. Manny had some strong thoughts before we started the show. The Resident Evil trailer came out for the movie. It's by the guy who directed Weapons. Zach Kreger, I believe is his name. Yeah, Manny, what are your thoughts on the trailer?
I mean, it looks like a horror movie, but it doesn't really look like Resident Evil to me. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It just seems like another situation where it's like, hey, you know, it's a Resident Evil film in name only. I mean, obviously they're trying something new with it, but then they're also saying that they want to, you know, can sort of loosely connect it to the Raccoon City incident. But if anyone who's a Resident Evil fan would see that there's no in the trailer.
Yeah.
And he's running through a snow-covered city. Did I get lost?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, something's up. Carlos, are you seeing what I'm hearing? The connection.
No, well, I heard Manny perfectly. I think, Tony, it might be you that's kind of lagging and glitching.
Maybe I have too many open tabs, bro.
Yeah, because I heard Manny perfect.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
All right. I think we're good now. I think it was too many open tabs. Fucking Chrome, you know? All right.
So, yeah, I thought.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Continue. Yeah, continue. No, just to your point, man, because the guy claims that it's taking place alongside Resident Evil 2.
Yeah. He claims that it's there's actually a commentary of him like talking about the trailer, and he goes, yeah, it, you know, I see it taking place, you know, at the same time as Resident Evil 2, about maybe around the time when Leon comes, you know, drives into the city and all that sort of stuff. But he's like, not, you know, it's not fully solidified. It's really just this other person's adventure in the, you know, Raccoon City outbreak, where he has to deliver something, you know, to there. But I'm like, the movie looks like it takes place during the winter, which, you know, it didn't happen during the winter. And then there's also a bunch of like new elements that they're sort of adding with the T-virus, which at the same time, it's like they're sort of suggesting people sort of combine in this, you know, like they're kind of merging together and stuff like that.
Okay.
So with the T virus. So I don't remember it having that. I mean, you know, other viruses have had that thing, right? Where they sort of merged. And then there's also sort of new sort of creatures that are not really related to anything that was in the games. Like there's this really big fat guy in the sewer for some reason.
Hmm. Yeah, they got Baron Harkonnen in that bitch.
Yeah, it looks like Baron Harkonnen. Again, like I get it. Like I get the idea of trying to essentially sort of stay a little bit away from the canon and do sort of like a sister film, right? Kind of like what the first Resident Evil film did, where it was like it takes place in it. It may have taken place in the mansion or adjoining mansion somewhere at the same place, but it had familiar elements, it had new characters, and then there was, you know, but it didn't get too far into the weeds where it started stepping on any of the game canon, but it could have existed in the game canon, right? But this one just seems like it's a little bit further away from it. So I would say if you're like a big old Resident Evil fan, I would just say just pretend it's the sequels of those, is like those sequels that guy did, to those original Resident Evil films. It's just like it's Resident Evil in name, but really doesn't have anything like to do with the actual game.
Yeah.
So that's about it. I always wonder about this sort of stuff where it's like, you know, so you invoke these sorts of names, right? You invoke these familiar names like, I don't know, Metal Gear or any of these sorts of things. And then you decide, hey, we're just going to make something totally foreign from whatever that originally was.
So stupid.
It's okay, like, so then why even invoke the name?
You know,
like,
why?
It's like making it like making a Bloodborne film and then making a romantic comedy. you know what I mean? Like, it's something that's just like, oh, like, okay, we have the name, so we're just going to make whatever the fuck we want with it. As opposed to, like, doing, like, you know, and a lot of people keep saying, oh, you know, they had to do it because, of, you know, the canon, all that stuff is a big old mess. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, then how is it that Fallout was able to do it?
Because Fallout canon isn't a big old mess.
But, I mean, the thing about it is that Fallout show fits in the world, right? And there's even...
Not really.
But there's even events that are in the games that are somewhat mentioned in that show, right?
It ruins the canon of the games. I think any property is best to kind of almost view as like kind of like a Marvel. Marvel's Otherworlds kind of thing. Like this, you know, this
like an Elseworlds sort of story.
Exactly. Like, yeah. It's always a divergent timeline.
But I feel like also like I feel like that one like does a pretty, you know, again, I don't know much about Fallout, but it seemed very close, right?
It was pretty close. The problem is that it moves some key dates around, which have like, the problem is that Fallout's lore is so vast that when you move key dates around and imply like infrastructure existed, it has far reaching implications. And so it really fucked up a lot of the earlier games. In which, like, what's weird is Fallout has a remarkably complex but actually consistent continuity. The thing I think that is going on with Resident Evil that I think allows some of this drift to happen is, at least from the outside, like, there was a very distinct shift at Resident Evil 4. And it almost kind of took I almost wish that they would have just gone a full, like, FromSoft approach and did them in name only, but they weren't necessarily connected. But they seemed to lose the thread of what they wanted their identity to be. And it shifted so much from, and I understand that the thread of like the T virus and then manipulating the T virus and then finding kind of the origins of the T virus. But that honestly feels like a constructed scaffolding more than a solid, you know, plot line that was built around that feels like more like they were finding the plot than building it.
That's how games typically are done, though.
In the game, yeah, like they're definitely looking for reasons to have to go to the spooky house or the spooky ship or the filled with zombies or something like that.
Yeah,
but I would say there's also things that they could have handled that are not directly like overtly mentioned in there. Like, you know, there's a whole like plot with, you know, as Oswald Spencer and his creation of the T-virus. You could totally stay away from the main canon and do a backstory film and still have it feel like, feel like it fits in. I just feel like this film, it's just like, they're like, we have the Resident Evil name. That's about it. You know, maybe we'll throw a couple of, hey, look, we put a little plant in the corner. Hey, look, somebody starts to do drawers and finds a gun. You know what I mean?
They use a gem to solve a puzzle. No, this is garbage.
That in there too, where he's like finding keys and they're like finding gems. And so he's like, he put little odes to that. But at the same time, I think about it this way. It's like, I don't feel like it's just an unrelated film.
That's fan service, not quality.
Yeah, it's not really anything. It's just like, hey, look, we're a Resident Evil film. We decided to throw a gem in there.
Well, the only reason I brought it up is because I kind of feel like, and I want to make sure this is clear because I'm not talking shit. I think Resident Evil suffers a little bit from its success. It's reinvented its own identity so many times that unless you're a hardcore fan, you're not really following the through line. You're like, I don't know, it was about zombies in a metropolitan area and then like a small town in Europe and then, I don't know, like Banjo, Hills Have Eyes shit. Like, you don't really know what the connection is. And I think it's been so many things that it's easy for Hollywood to step in and be like, well, we can just make whatever we want. Like, no, there is a through line. Mm-hmm. It's just not clear to people who aren't in the know. And I think that has caused it to seem like it can be just this, oh, we could just throw anything into a Resident Evil universe and be like, oh, it's totally Resident Evil. No, because they don't, but it's a core misunderstanding of the franchise, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an accurate assessment. To Manny, to your point, I think this is a classic example of, and this happened with the Resident Evil TV series as well. Hey, we already had this idea written, slap a name everybody knows and push it out the door. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. This wasn't conceived, at least in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, because this guy claims to be a fan, and I'm not, I'll say yes, he is a fan, but you know who else was a fan? Brian, you know where I'm going with this, right?
M. Night,
we always know where you're going with this, Tony.
Zack Snyder was a fan.
Oh, okay,
Zack,
you mentioned the Hall of Armor.
Oh, no, there's that too. Avi Arad, yeah, he claims to be a fan, right? No, but Zack Snyder, perfect example. This guy, I wanted to invoke The Dark Knight Returns. In that book, Batman kills people. There is one panel where he takes the guy and blows his brains out. I want to have something like that. And I'm like, did we read the same book, Mr. Snyder? Because that panel you're talking about, Batman aims a gun at a guy, shoots, and blows the wall next to the guy's head to scare him. And in that same book, you know what he does with that gun? He breaks it and he says, we don't use this. This is the weapon of cowards. So just because you're a I know I went off. I could go fucking Zach Wild. But the point is, just because you're a fan of something doesn't mean you're going to actually honor it correctly. And I could be wrong, but at least from what I've heard about this trailer, it seems like, oh, yeah, I like Resident Evil, but I'm going to do my story instead, you know? But I'm a fan.
That's what it genuinely feels like. It feels like, hey, I like Resident Evil, but I got things I need to do.
Yeah.
So again, like there's like an audio commentary, like, you know, like thing that he did for, I guess, IGN or somebody. And he just talks about the whole trailer and he talks about how much, and he has his information. He says, he liked this game. He liked this. He liked these aspects of it. So it's like it's a weird sort of way he's doing an homage to Resident Evil, but not really a legit. I think the film definitely is more concerned with just being a horror film.
Yeah.
Than obviously being a Resident Evil film. So it may actually be pretty scary, unlike a lot of the Resident Evil films that have existed before.
They ain't horror movies, I'll tell you that. You know?
Man, if you really expect somebody to let their ego get out of the way and make a Resident Evil movie instead of, quote, my interpretation of a Resident Evil movie brought to you by me.
Yes.
No, it'll definitely be like, hey, I'm gonna make my Resident Evil. All right.
This is you, bro.
This is what I think should be.
Yeah, and they're hiding behind that. Oh, I'm a fan. You know, they're hiding behind that bullshit. Contrast that with ironically enough, another Capcom movie with Street Fighter, right? That shit looks corny as fuck, but you could tell fans made that shit. You could tell they loved them some motherfucking Street Fighter, you know? This shit, you're like, okay, It's a horror movie, sure, but how is this Resident Evil again? Very different approach, you know?
Yeah, it'll be like, here's the thing. So, like, if it ends up being a more successful, like, horror movie than an actual Resident Evil film, I guess they did their job, right?
You know? Yeah. It's crazy. Anybody else have any thoughts on this trailer, if you've seen it?
Carlos?
Nobody cares? Nobody's seen it?
Richard, you don't like it?
Yeah.
I mean, it looks okay. I didn't really have any issues with it, but I also didn't think, like, incredible. We'll see. I mean, the director, you know, apparently does pretty good horror movies. So we'll see what he does with this. I saw
his previous film, Weapons. I don't know. I thought it was a little silly. I mean, everybody running around like Naruto run. I don't know.
Oh, man.
He's really stupid to me.
I'm watching this stupid trailer now. He already is like, how is this Resident Evil? So, Rich, tell us why this is your most anticipated movie of the year.
Hey, whoa, hold on. Who said that? that's like something Carlos, I could have swore Carlos said this. I agree with a lot of the points you guys made. It's I know this guy is a huge Resident Evil fan. I saw him do interviews talking about he beat Resident Evil Requiem multiple times. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is just, I guess he's a fan, but he wanted to make something like paying homage to the games. The one thing that he did say in one of those interviews is that like stuff like resource management, upgrading weapons, he wanted to put that in the movie. And I believe in that trailer, it does show the character with a shotgun.
Yeah, you're right. I just saw that now. Yeah.
So I could see that concept and how they can build upon that concept. But overall, yeah, I just think it's just okay. We'll have to wait and see how it is. But movie of the year? Absolutely not. No. Oh no. No.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. I'm watching this now, bro. I'm like, how is this Resident Evil? You know, and why is this shit taking place in the winter if it's supposed to be Raccoon City?
It's supposed to be
maybe it's because
city.
It's Ethan.
It rain?
Yeah.
Maybe it rained. Maybe it rained, right?
Yeah. This
it is... rained and all the snow melted.
Yeah, that's all I needed to see. No. I'm good. Go ahead.
You know, I think what you said, I think when Manny made the point, they could have had a backstory about the scientist that it started this virus. That would have been a far more interesting movie. I think this guy, it really is just like a courier trying to get somewhere. He gets lost and then he runs into this, I guess, Raccoon City or whatever they're calling Raccoon City.
He's got some sort of box inside with him that has a little white cross on it. So it's like thing on there. So he's delivering something, and from what the guy said, he's delivering it to Raccoon City. I'm like, okay, so at what point do you say, okay, we're not gonna just do this? You know, and I'm like, he's like, I just really need this job.
It's crazy.
So let me just go deliver it with all these monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I guess does it seem like a lot of people on this panel are going to go see it, but we'll see.
Nah, I'm not going to see it. There's that other piece of shit, Welcome to Raccoon City, which is another piece of garbage they put out. That other thing that they did. What was it? The Lance Reddick thing, you know, which was that Netflix show.
Yeah, that was trash.
You have a lot of people. You have a lot of these. I just feel like a lot of these Resident Evil films are just essentially Sony trying to keep the rights to the Resident Evil franchise. So they just put out a piece of shit, you know, just to keep it for a little while longer. Granted, in this situation, I don't think it's going to be that much of a piece of shit because the guy legitimately makes decent films, like decent horror films. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. And the last story I want to talk about, and this is mostly because it's come to my attention this last week, so this could have been going on. Actually, I think it has been going on a little bit longer, but it's reached a point where it even has its own dedicated Twitter account. We got to talk about the Pokemon card insanity. I know this isn't exactly video games. Pokemon is a video game, so let's just go with that. Have you guys seen these videos of people fucking each other up in Walmarts and stuff for rare Pokemon cards, even stealing cards off of kids and shit? And then the latest story I saw today was there was a guy who hid inside a Best Buy trying to be the first one in line when it opened in the morning. They got arrested his ass.
So, yeah, it was I saw this other one. Like, I mean, granted, I saw it was just a video showing the difference between, like, just a normal kid like who wants to buy a little Pokemon card box, and then the fucked up crazy people adult scalper guys. So it's like a situation. You have this one kid who just wants one box of the thing, and then you have all these wacko adults essentially like picking up 10 copies and then like, you know, just so they can fucking scalp it on eBay or something. So it just, and like again, the kid looks, you know, just wants to get whatever he wants to get. He doesn't want to buy 10 of them. He just wants to buy the one he wants. So it's like, that's the biggest issue with a lot of these, when these sorts of like, you know, things that are meant for children sort of like leak into the adult space, where it becomes this sort of weird, ravenous sort of like scalper thing. And it's pretty disgusting. It's all over the place, though. It's in like action figures. It's in all kinds of things that were classically considered like children's entertainment things. Now you have these wacko, you know, now since everybody's older and has disposable incomes now they want to just start taking advantage of people. Happened in comics too.
Yeah.
Gotta get that number one. Gotta get that Chrome cover.
Yeah, and then you brought this to my attention too. What really kind of started this nonsense was our good friend Logan Paul.
Yeah, he bought himself a fucking expensive like a Pokemon card during the pandemic, right? And it got all people all riled up. Oh shit, really? And he did that shit recently with a first release manga of Naruto.
No, One Piece.
Sorry, yeah. It's like, no, man, like that shit just needs to just be as it is. When you start creating fucking fake demand like that shit, because I'm sure you could find those things all over the damn place.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's crazy.
You could probably find one sitting in the because usually people who read their mangas, they usually put them inside of the top of the on the Japanese train. They put them in a little thing on top of the in the train where, you know, somebody could pull a manga down and read it while they're on the train. So
yeah, well, Japanese culture, you know, higher trust society than us here, you know.
Yeah, it's higher trust society. I noticed like there's this one thing I think I showed it to you where it's like, essentially, so Japanese people don't actually call the cops when they see a person who like drunk who passed out on the sidewalk. They leave the person alone, but what they do is they put a bunch of water bottles around them. So when they wake up, they could essentially get themselves sober.
That's
so
funny.
It's interesting.
But yeah, has anybody else seen these crazy videos of people literally getting into fist fight? It looks like old school Black Friday, you know? People just fucking each other up for Pokemon cards.
It's pretty disgusting.
Yeah, it's been going on for a while now, but I think we're reaching a fever pitch with this stuff. And like you mentioned, it's ridiculous. I did see some of the videos. I did see I saw the picture of the dude who slept on, I don't know, was it a Walmart or Target or something?
That guy looks like the kind of guy that would sleep in a Best Buy to get Pokemon cards.
Yo, man, that dude wanted was a Pokemon, man. Going to jail and shit, and people asking, what you in for? Is that a Pokemon?
Yeah. Yeah, Rich, what are your thoughts on this, and how many Pokemon cards do you have in your collection?
That's a zero, and I just want to say Carlos missed his opportunity to tell a very good joke, so I will do it for him. So this is what they mean when they say, gotta catch them all, right? Because these people are absolutely crazy. I mean, yeah, it is funny. It's funny to see it. It's funny to see this. You know, I didn't see the videos yet. You said there were people fighting. I didn't see that video, but I did
see the
photo of the guy. So, yeah, it's crazy stuff. I don't understand it.
Yeah, Rich, there's an entire Twitter channel dedicated to Pokemon fights. Like, because this happens all the time, apparently.
Pokemon fight, gotta fight them all.
So let me ask you a question. What is the of these fights? What is the which card? Which Pokemon are they fighting over? Is this like Charizard or Pikachu?
I have no idea.
They just fight in general.
I have absolutely no idea.
They're like sets, like packs and stuff that are brand new. And, you know, you open the packs and you might find something that's very valuable, or do you hold on to the packs and sell them later because they usually gain in price. So, yeah, it's pretty much that. The trading market in Pokemon is ridiculous. And mostly it's not even fans are fans of Pokemon just because they want to, you know, of the. Not just the money aspect, which is a huge part of it, but also because of the clout. You know, it's about to have a Pokemon, a rare Pokemon card.
Man, look at this shit. So the account I'm talking about is called PokeStreets. And there's one video I'm looking at now. Walbart Woodruff RD in Greensville, South Carolina. No line, just one guy. According to a submission, he cleared the entire drop by himself. Right place, right time, or bad for the hobby. Bad for the hobby. So he just bought the whole shit for himself.
Bad for the hobby.
Wow, that is horrible.
In a cave.
Yeah, that is crazy. Yeah, you got to watch this account. People are just fucking each other up, doing all kinds of crazy shit for Pokemon cards. And the stores don't even limit them. They're like, yeah, buy as many as you want because they make their money. They don't care, you know? So, yeah, I don't get it. I legit don't get it, man. You know, but the thing is, I talked to you about this, and I also had a follow-up conversation about this with another colleague. I'm like, I never got into the whole collecting stuff. Like, remember, like, you know, I was buying comic books in the height of the collector boom, right? But I wasn't buying them to get money. I just wanted to read them, you know? Same thing with those fucking X-Men cards that I bought. I didn't buy them because, oh, I'm going to flip them for money. I'm like, I just want the cards. So I don't understand that mentality of, like, buying something to sell it later. I'm like, if I'm buying something, it's because I fucking want it for myself, you know? But then you have people over here, you know, ruining it for others, you know? Go ahead.
Did people fight over Tickle Me Elmo? I know that thing was kind of...
I think so.
Yeah, well, that was a Black Friday thing, though.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, like I said, that's what these videos remind me of. It's like old school Black Friday. Nobody does Black Friday anymore. Everybody just shops online, you know? But before, motherfuckers used to beat the shit out of each other, you know? For a fucking... you know, TV or whatever, or a microwave. You know, now they're fucking each other for a Pikachu card. You know, go figure. And with that, we are done here. Let's start wrapping it up. Rich was coming up on the Coalition this weekend.
Yeah, so like I said, I'm still working on my Invincible Versus review, so stay tuned for that. Also, I did get a chance to check out NBA The Run, a.k.a. NBA Street 2026. So I'll have something to say about that too soon. And there's a couple other things that I really can't talk about yet, but I will just say stay tuned to thecoalition.com as well as the Coalition Gaming. And one final shout out, the TV Terminal, Adam Vale. Make sure you check out that channel because he's working on multiple shows right now.
Yeah, that's why you don't see him on Throwout anymore. He doesn't even have life anymore. He just does TV Terminal all day, every day. That's it. Too many TV shows to cover. Oh, man. Manny, you have anything?
No, not right now. Everything that I am on is under wraps, but you will be seeing them soon. Let's see. One thing I can say is, if you're a Boston Celtics fan, you know, and you're going to the games, there's a cool cheer card that as long as, the team is in the playoffs, if you go into any of the home games, you get a cool cheer card by Karen Randolph and myself. So, it's like a cool looking comic book cover. So, yep, that's about it.
All right, good stuff. All right, we're done here. So make sure you follow Throw It on Twitch and the Twitter. Subscribe on YouTube. Join a Discord gang. I saw a couple of new people in there, so shout out to you. And of course, we are on your favorite podcast app, so you can find us there as well. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch. Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
And Brian Manjoma.
Later, people.
All right, guys, we shall return on Sunday. Later.
Peace.
Later.